Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Ann Chasser, Commissioner for Trademarks at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, which is a bureau of the Department of Commerce. Joining us in our conversation is Steve Watson, another PwC partner.
In 2001, the number of trademark applications was significantly less than what was projected. What steps are you taking to adjust human resources to the reduced demand for your services, and how are you managing this impact on your employees?
It has been a real challenge. What we saw in the trademark, and I keep calling it the trademark side of the house, was in terms of the level of our trademark filings, we found that we reflect the economy. And for example, we did a tracking, and we saw that the trend lines in trademark application filings mirrored the NASDAQ from the 1990s. So as you can imagine, the NASDAQ graph and the bubble in 1999 and 2000, we experienced that bubble where we saw unprecedented growth of 27% compounded 2 years in a row. Now, can you imagine running a business that grew at that kind of a rate? Well, then what we saw in 2001, as the bubble burst, we saw that happen to our trademark application as well. This past year, we experienced a 21% decline in trademark application filings over the previous year. Now, having said that, that was still the second highest level in the history of the office. But in terms of how do you manage that exponential growth and then retrenchment, what we were able to do was put, thanks actually to the performance-based organization status that we achieved through the AIPA, which is the American Inventor Protection Act of 1999, we were able to put certain flexibilities in terms of incentive pay for performance. And we had a certain incentive programs for our examining attorneys. Plus, I mentioned our work-at-home program, which resulted in higher productivity, fact that we had more seasoned examiners. So we were literally able this past year to work through our entire backlog, which was the first time in 13 years that we achieved a first action pendency, which is a term of art, which means the first time a customer receives an office action indicating the likelihood of their application becoming a trademark. And we refer to that as pendency to the 3-month period. We were able to achieve that. And then we saw this drop in filings. I might also mention that we were able to achieve that with a net gain of only 6 examiners from the beginning of the fiscal year to the end of the fiscal year. So I'm very proud of that process. But what happened was we didn't have the backlog to work off of. So we right now have more examiners than we need when you run your economic model. But how we're dealing with that, we have made a commitment to work as diligently and as hard as possible to retain our highly trained, effective workforce, because we know that the patterns of filings are inconsistent and up and down. And so when the economy recovers, we want to be prepared to maintain that level of customer service that our customers are expecting now, receiving actions in a timely way. So what we have done in the short run is that we've been able to redirect some of our highly trained examining attorneys to other areas within the trademark business that we haven't been able to pay attention to these last several years because we've been so focused on getting the work out the door. So we're working on infrastructure activities. We have detailed our examiners to the Office of General Counsel, to various offices that the trademark users fee support within the USPTO. So it appears to be working well. We're monitoring this very, very closely. We are communicating very closely with our examiners and our employees because, after all, our employees are our most valuable asset. And so it's very important that we keep the lines of communication open. But it's difficult.
You mentioned some of the flexibilities you have because PTO is a performance-based organization, or PBO. How else has being a PBO affected, say, culture or the day-to-day operations?
Well, the Patent and Trademark Office was actually the second performance-based organization designated, the first being the in the Department of Education Student Financial Aid. So we had a great opportunity, I think, to define what a performance-based organization is. And I think what it allowed us to do is really talk about how we're doing business and look at running the business as a business from a sort of a strategic perspective, and it provided certain flexibilities, as I mentioned, with regard to pay for performance through incentive programs and so forth. We are still, though, subject to Title V under the federal legislation. We're also subject to the appropriation process.
Measuring performance has become an increasingly important part of doing business in the public sector. We know that the Patent and Trademark Office has developed a balanced scorecard performance measurement system. How do you measure customer satisfaction, and what results have you seen to date?
Well, you know, Steve, I mentioned earlier that we are an organization of engineers and scientists and lots of analytical kinds of professionals that work in the Patent and Trademark Office. So measurement is something that we are outstanding at. We're very good at measuring all kinds of processes. You mentioned the customer satisfaction. We have an annual customer satisfaction survey that goes out every single year, and I believe, well, 5 or 6 years. So we have historical data, and we're very specific with our customers in terms of key drivers and what leads to customer satisfaction. So we have our external customer satisfaction survey, as well as a number of internal measures that we look at to evaluate how we're doing business. So when there's a disconnect between our internal measures and our customer satisfaction numbers, we know we have to laser into that area and try to meld the perception and the reality closer together.
Congress has mandated a reduction in the application processing time to 3 months. Could you describe how employee incentive programs are aligned and how they contribute to meeting this goal?
Well, I did mention my little bragging rights a little earlier about how the 3 months for application processing time was achieved this past year, and we're very proud of it because it was the first time in 13 years we have met that goal. And I did mention a little earlier some of the incentive programs that we worked on in terms of productivity awards and so forth, which were very successful.
The agency's balanced scorecard system also measures employee satisfaction. I think you mentioned a few internal measures you have. What results have you seen in your employee satisfaction survey, and how have programs such as your work-at-home program helped the PTO to attract and retain high-quality workers?
Well, our work-at-home program is one of the most successful programs. We have actually examiners lining up to work at home because of the tremendous, not only the ability to work at home, but when it actually provides more time to get the job done because you're not sitting there in traffic. And we are able to measure the work being done because, as I mentioned earlier, we are an operation that has a deliverable. So we're able to measure the deliverables, and having a highly professional workforce, the ability to work on your own, you know, without supervision and all those kinds of issues is very, very positive. And so we're very pleased with our work-at-home program.
You mentioned you had employees lining up to join the work-at-home mm-hmm. program. Why not roll it out quicker?
Well, there's a cost associated with the work-at-home program because we literally replicate the desktop in their home. And so we're talking about resource needs. We're also looking for broadband lines to the homes, which are, you know, so it's a resource issue at this point in terms of, you know, setting it. We currently have, I believe it's about 28% of our examining corps is working at home, and we're actually developing a new program, a pilot program, a hoteling concept. And I actually believe your company has a successful piloting program that we'd love to visit sometime. But the hoteling program for your audience, it's literally, think of it as five people sharing one office. And so what that is going to enable us to do is to eliminate valuable office space and turn it back for other uses, either within the PTO or through GAO.
Have you had any unintended consequences or any disappointments with the work-at-home program? I mean, often people like to work in teams together and meet at the coffee pot and discuss stuff, and that just can't be done. Have there been discoveries like that?
Yeah, I don't think that work-at-home is for everyone. I personally think that I probably wouldn't be able to work at home because I'd find other things to do besides my work if I was at home. And I don't think work-at-home is for everyone because some people thrive in a more collegial environment and, you know, talking around the coffee pot and so forth. What we have found is a community springing up among our examining attorneys through listservs or, you know, coming to the office one day a week and meeting colleagues and friends. One of the requirements of our work at home program right now is that you need to come to the office 4 hours a week to take care of administrative functions and training sessions and group meetings and so forth. So we try to provide some opportunities for interaction. And one or two of our examining attorneys who have worked at home have decided that it's not for them, that they prefer being in the office. So I think what we're trying to do is develop a menu of opportunities and choices of how to get the work done.
Well, that's a good stopping point. Come back as we continue our discussion with Ann Chasser of PTO. How does one recruit, manage, and motivate such a highly skilled workforce? We'll ask her when the Business of Government Hour continues.